righty, welcome back in. Hour number three of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We were on the air for the historical upset last week on Friday, where Fairleigh Dickinson became the second ever 16 seed to take down a number one seed with their victory up against the Purdue Boilermakers. The man behind that history was Tobin Anderson, who was the coach at Fairleigh Dickinson and now has a new job as the head men's basketball coach at Iona, and he's kind enough to join us right now. Coach, first off, thank you for just what is a wonderful memory last week. Congratulations on the new gig, and how are you?
Of course, Zach. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
So how has life been for you? If you take a deep breath, because I know you probably haven't had time to really process a lot of this with how much it's been moving so quickly. Since Friday to now, with the job change as well, how has life been?
It's been crazy. Like, just so crazy. Like, just nonstop. And I haven't had a chance to take a deep breath. I'm hoping to maybe at the end of this weekend. But it's just from going from the high of the tournament, the wins, the success, you know, and then all of a sudden you come home and you're, you know, new job and, you know, meet the players, meet the people, saying goodbye to your old team. It's just been an incredible last, week or so. So I'm trying to slow down a little bit if I can, but it's been pretty crazy.
What you guys did on that Friday night, people are going to talk about forever. Let's just say in 10 years from now, someone that didn't see your team says, Coach, what was it like to coach that Fairleigh Dickinson team? What would you tell them?
Well, I mean, I don't think any team could play harder than we played that night. Like, we just are more connected, more focused, more able to just go through the ups and downs of a game. We were so locked into what we had to do. The most impressive was us being on that biggest stage, not being used to it. And we acted like a team that was, you know, used to being there. We played like a more veteran team, a more experienced team, a more, team ready for anything. So I just thought you couldn't play any harder, any tougher, any more together. And that's what I was most proud of.
The last few years, I was fortunate enough to be able to talk to Shaheen Holloway after his team was able to have that great upset with the 15 beating a 2. Same with Paul Mills at the time at Oral Roberts. And they always had confidence. They knew they belonged. Clearly, you guys knew you belong. Where does that confidence come from that your group was able to have?
We just have tough kids. Like our point guard in Utah, Demetri Roberts, who ended up being one of the best, I think one of the best guards in the tournament so far. He just has that feel to him. He's a Mount Vernon kid from outside New York City that he thinks he belongs with anybody. You know, you put him in an NBA game, you put him in a Knicks-Lakers game tonight, he'll play like he should be the starting point guard. And so he didn't back down from anybody. It's just the way he's been. And he's our leader. So when he brought it like we knew he could, that gets across to the rest of the team. So, yeah, it's just a bunch of tough guys that can play. And I think me running my big mouth before the game and saying we had a chance to beat Purdue probably got us more excited because we knew we had to play well just because we didn't want to look like a bunch of idiots, you know?
Well, Coach, it's the biggest boss move in the history of the tournament. You basically guaranteed the victory, and then you did so when everyone thought you were crazy. That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I was worried we might get beat by 40. I'm like, if I say that and they come out and they beat us by 40, I'll be the biggest clown of all time. So it ended up, but I have tremendous belief in our team. I really did. And we played so well in the first four, and that kind of got us a chance to get off to a good start of the tournament and play and get some confidence and some juice to us. And that just kind of carried over to Purdue.
Did you really not want that speech that you gave to your team to not get on camera? Just wondering.
I actually didn't mind it. You know, it is what it is. Like, you got to kind of, you know, I mean, the most important thing was for our players to hear it. You know, so if it was on camera, off camera, whatever it was, I wanted our players to know we were going into that game, the middle of the ring, ready to fight, ready to go battle and play our best, and we did.
Tobin Anderson here with us. You talked about how dominant your guards were also down low on Edie, down late in the game. You guys just did not let him breathe. Was that the biggest approach, your guards to dominate the game and then just have guys all over Edie at all times?
Yeah, for us to win, we had to play it that way. I thought we had better guards, which is something saying something crazy because they have Big Ten guards. I thought we had better guards. We had to make Edie uncomfortable, which he was, and just keep him, you know, surrounded by double teams, help, you know, the constant traps, half traps, things like that. And then our bench ended up being better than their bench. They were afraid to sub at one point, and our guys off the bench were playing so well. And I just, you know, it's like in most of those games against 16 versus the one, at some point the number one seed just kind of pulls away and puts their fist down. We got down by six at one point and never went away, never flinched, never blinked, and just kept coming. I'm just so, you know. And I thought the next game against Florida Atlantic did the same thing too. I mean, it's almost harder because after a win like that, it would have been easy for us to kind of go away, go home, and just celebrate the Purdue win. I thought we played just as well, if not better, than the next game, and had a chance we could be playing tonight in the Sweet 16. That would have been great too. But I just proud of our guys and how they handle themselves.
I'll tell you, Tobin Anderson, my favorite part of the game was when you guys were up three with like 10 or 12 seconds left. And they were trying to inbound the ball to Edie, and then they had to settle for that jumper in the corner, which was an air ball. That had to be their third or fourth look. You guys just did not give them any space.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. We did a great job. Our guys were so locked in and so focused. And at a certain point, we kind of knew, we got that confidence. We knew we were the better team, and we played that way. And they got tentative. It's hard being the number one seed. It's tough being, you know, you get a lot of pressure. You're kind of playing, for the most part, in the Midwest, you're playing a home game. And, you know, the crowd had turned to us about, I don't know, halfway through the first half. The crowd started getting into us a little bit, and then we almost had our own home court advantage. So it was a surreal experience.
And I was at that Florida Gulf Coast game against Georgetown in Philly a few years back, and to hear the entire stadium just root for FGCU, when the crowd is chanted FDU, that's just got to be a surreal moment where you pinch yourself and you're like, look where I was a year ago. This team had four wins, and you come in, and now you guys are on the verge of taking down the number one seed.
Yeah, I told him one time, Madison Fellows, look around. I said, just look around. There's 20,000 people here, and they're almost all for us. Like, the whole world, they're all behind us. That's not counting the people on TV, the people in other arenas. I mean, I saw some videos of other arenas putting the game on the big screen, and the other arenas chanting FDU too. So it was just an unbelievable experience, and that's the beauty of this tournament. Is it takes a team like ours, an underdog, and makes us into a big story, and that was great.
I know it's a blur, but what were you thinking about, Tobin Anderson, when you're walking off the court?
Oh, you know, a little bit of everything. You know, you think about your family, obviously, you make so many sacrifices, how great they are, and like the journey. For being a Division III coach, and like, you know, I'm walking off. We've won a lot of games, but you walk off the game there, and no one really cares. They're just like, you go back, you get your pizza, you get your subs, and you hop on a bus and go home. No one really cares. So just to be in that experience, to walk off that court for 20,000 people, and they're all going crazy. And you know, I was thankful. I walked off with my athletic director, Brad Hurlbut, and to be there with him, he took a chance on me, hired me, and who would have thought we had done this in 10 months? So pretty special.
Well, the emotion you showed really did resonate with me. When I think it was Jamie Erdahl who asked you about your father and what this would mean if he was able to see it. Just tell me a little bit more about your dad, who was a coach, obviously, and Steve.
Yeah, my dad was I was very close to him. And, you know, a coach. And I grew up, I love basketball. Like, I met basketball the whole life. I can't do much else besides coach basketball. So I was in a gym when I was old enough to walk. Like, I went to every one of his practices. Me and him, we used to fly to or drive to clinics. Coaching clinics, the two of us together, when I was probably 8 or 10 years old. So I spent an unbelievable amount of time with him. I played for him, obviously, which is not easy to do sometimes, playing for your father. So and he was my assistant coach at Division III. He retired and became my assistant. So we spent so much time together, so much time around basketball. You know, our whole life is basketball. So obviously, to have that opportunity, you think to yourself, man, I wish he was here to see this. I'm not sure he could handle the whole thing. He'd been going crazy, but you know, I know how proud he'd have been, and obviously I miss him all the time. But you know, he still loves his voice and his how he handled himself and how he had coached his guys and taught his players still lives on with me. I hear his voice all the time.
Tobin Anderson wrapping up with him, the star of the NCAA tournament at Fairleigh Dickinson, now the new head coach at Iona. Also, when you look at this grind and this journey that you've been on, when you got the job at Fairleigh Dickinson a year ago, Coach, like, what were you expecting to do in year one, just wondering?
Just trying to be somewhat competitive, honestly. Like, we lost some good players off the team that before. They had three or four guys that ended up being pretty good Division I players this year. So we lost some good players. So we were just hoping to maybe get, you know, to 10 wins, show some fire, show some competitiveness, establish a culture, a way of playing. And no way in anyone in wildest dreams do we think we have a chance to go to the NCAA tournament and then go to the NCAA tournament, win two games, and beat a number one seed and the biggest win in school history or in NCAA tournament history. Just that was, you know, we just wanted to compete. So, yeah, I mean, I told the guys, I thought this could happen. I thought it would take us 4 or 5 years to make this happen. We just kind of sped the process up and did it in 10 months, which is pretty unheard of. And that takes more than just a head coach. That takes a great staff, a great support staff and administration, and obviously great players.
A lot of people nationally just know you for these last three games. What is Iona getting, though, in their next head basketball coach since you're replacing Rick Pitino?
Well, we had practice this morning already at 7 a.m., right? So, you know, I'm a hard worker. I'm a grinder. I'm going to do what it takes for us to be successful. Like, our players are going to work hard, but so great staff and do it the right way. You know, and I'll, you know, nothing will change for me. Like, my wife always makes fun of me all the time. I'm 85. Like, I love what I do. So, we're just going to go right back to work and try to make Iona basketball. You know, it already is pretty good. Let's make it even better and do things that have not been done before.
What was the holy crap moment for you? Everyone in the sports world, everyone outside of the sports world is talking for you. What was the message or the tweet that you got that you're like, I can't believe this person is talking about Tobin Anderson?
Yeah, there's been so many, like, the tweets, the texts, all that kind of stuff. There's one, you know, obviously Bill Belichick texted me one night. It was great. And then I get that. The funny part is, like, Frank Caliendo, you know, the guy does the impersonation, yeah. Does the white spider, you know, he sent me a direct message. He wants to do a fast-talking basketball coach as his next thing. I couldn't stop laughing about that. So that was pretty crazy too.
I know you have the Wesleyan connection. Did you ever have a conversation prior to a few nights ago with Belichick before that?
Nope, not at all. Nope, I had not a chance at all. You know, obviously admired him and thought the world of him, and then yeah, we heard him text me. You know, the night after the Purdue game was pretty awesome.
That's unbelievable. Well, Coach, it's been surreal. It's been great. The only thing I want to ask you before we let you run, you've been on this grind since 1996. You've done it at all different levels, and now you're getting the big national spotlight. Just if there's a young coach that's 22, 23, just getting into this, just what type of advice would you give them?
You know, just keep working and get yourself ready. Like, you know, my dad always told me, like, you know, at some point you'll get a chance. Make sure you're ready. And so I think I was definitely ready when I got my chance. It took me a little bit longer to get that chance on the national stage, but I was definitely ready. Like, get yourself ready. Like, do all you can. Like, prepare yourself. Like, do all the work. Surround yourself with good people. Like, keep working. Keep winning and, like, having success. Don't take any shortcuts. Because, you know, at some point, you know, if you do all the right things and work hard, you will get a chance. And then when you get the chance, you got to take advantage. So we definitely took it. Mean, and I told our players that. This is a great opportunity. Very few people have this opportunity. Let's go take advantage of it. So I think our team did. I think I did. So that was special.
I know you're a student of the game. Is it a little bit crazy for you when you hear that you're taking over a job that Rick Pitino just had last week?
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, I think more so in my mind, Iona basketball has been so good for so long with so many different coaches. So obviously Pitino's a Hall of Fame coach. But the guy before him, Tim Kloos, did an unbelievable job too. Went to 5 straight NCAA tournaments, you know, and Kevin Willard and Jim Valvano and Tim Welsh. I mean, there's been so many, Kevin, you know, all those guys that have been there. So I'm following a legacy of great coaches that have won for a long time. So it's not, you know, obviously I have great respect for Coach Pitino. I still, a lot of things he does, we do defensively with the press and the up-tempo style. But I'm taking over a program that's, you know, one of the best winning programs on the whole East Coast. And so a lot of pride, a lot of excitement.
Well, Coach, we really do appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Congratulations. Thank you.
My pleasure. Great talking to you. Take care.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. For your daily news brief, we get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty, two games right now to start the Sweet 16. Kansas State, with 4:34 to go, is up 77-73. Marcus Noel has just been unbelievable with 14 points and 14 assists as well. Also has 3 steals in this contest. So we'll continue to monitor this one and tell you how it does play out. But Marquis Dowell has just been phenomenal in this game. And in the other game, we're still waiting for the second half to resume. But UConn is up 46-29 up against Arkansas. And you know who's not probably doing a pig suey right now? Did you see who's sitting courtside at the Razorbacks game up against the Huskies?
I did not. I'll take one guess, John Daly.
That would be correct.
See, I need a stiff drink at halftime. Maybe a few.
May need to call the Hogs.
Got to call a lot of things right now to get some help. Call the National Guard. No. All right, didn't Shannon Sharp do that?
Oh, yeah.
Bring them in for Arkansas. They need all the help they can get right now.
So a few years ago, if you recall, I forget which tournament it was that I was at, but I was at a golf tournament, and John Daly got an exemption from walking, and he was able to use a cart, and Tiger Woods was not happy with that. Do you think when John Daly goes into whatever club he's in, because I'd imagine, right, you're sitting courtside, you have some fancy access to some club. That's usually how these things work. Do you think he gets a golf cart ride, or he's able to walk over on his own accord?
I would say he's probably able to walk to the elevator on his own accord. So I think he'd be doing okay.
Okay. I don't know about that. I feel like Daly's usually a golf cart guy. And he had some great things in his golf cart. He'd have like cigarettes. He'd have like M&M's, Skittles.
How are you going to get a golf cart? Where's he going?
It's John Daly.
Are they going to stop the game?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. John Daly needs a drink. So let's drive the golf cart up. Take him off.
It'd be the most entertaining part of this game so far.
That would be true. That would absolutely be true.
All right, let's listen up to Ed Cooley. This was to John Fanta at Fox Sports on why he left Providence for Georgetown.
It was change. It was, we thought about it long and hard. My daughter being here was a major motivating thing to do, as she's going to stay here when she graduates in May. I just felt it, you know, being born and raised in Rhode Island, being the head coach of Providence College, who I love. I'll always be a Providence person. I'll always be a Friar. To leave was really, really hard. But when I did a deep dive of what's important, I've always said yes to everybody. And I've always said no to Ed. Coach Cooley did everything, but Ed needed a change. And I thought Georgetown was the place for me to make that change. As hard as it was, because it's in conference, and a lot of people look at that as villainous or betrayal, I hope people give me an opportunity to serve Ed. And it sounds selfish. Sounds real selfish, but sometimes change is needed on both sides, and I thought for me, change was needed.
Oh, sorry. Hickey just got in my ear. Is he still going? Whenever you're using a third person to justify a move, you lose me. But what he's saying is he wanted to personally do this. So instead of all that other bullcrap, Coach Cooley always serves everyone. Now I have to serve Ed. Just say, I had a great run at Providence. I love Providence. That's home for me. But I want to move on. I'm starting a new chapter. I want to do this for myself. Boom. End of story. End of answer. It's amazing how it takes Ed Cooley this long to basically say, I had a great run at Providence, but I'm ready to move on. This guy has turned out to be, we were talking about this on Monday, Hickey, how he's one of the coolest dudes in college basketball, to now he has just botched this. You want to leave, that's one thing. First of all, I don't love leaving in conference, but you leave in conference, I know you're not going to look good, but just be as honest as you could be. And he's been dancing around the issue. And whenever you go to the third person and you start talking about, there's Coach Cooley, and then there's Ed. Like, what are we doing here? This is a disgrace.
I feel bad for the ex-girlfriends that he probably has in the past. Could you imagine how he tries to break up with them? Listen, sweetheart, you know, honey boy has been doing this all for you, but now Ed needs what Ed wants, and you are not giving it for Ed, so I got to go.
It's not Coach Cooley who has a problem with you. Just Ed.
And it probably took 3 weeks for that conversation to be had of dancing around the subject. Just rip off the Band-Aid.
No, or he already made the agreement that he was going to break up with this girl, didn't tell this girl, and then already found his new girlfriend and held her kind of in the corner and didn't tell her that, this was official, but I'm going to be joining you officially, and then wait 4 weeks. Because that's what basically it seems like happened here with Providence. He knew a month ago he was going to do this, and then this week it all just ended up coming to fruition. What a joke. It really is. All right, let's hear the Providence AD, Steve Napolillo. He says Georgetown betrayed the trust of the conference.
The Big East was built on dignity, respect, and camaraderie. When we reconfigured in 2013, we were all in together. We root for each other when we're not playing for each other, and I just don't think it's a good look for a fellow institution. As I said, should I be going out right now and hiring another Big East coach? So there's a trickle-down effect. We have way too much, we love the league way too much to start that type of carousel.
First off, he's full of crap, but I love it. Because he's speaking to his fans there. He's catering to the fans that are irate about this. If he was at Georgetown, let's say, and he wasn't at Providence, he would have been a fool to try to not pursue Ed Cooley. The other part of this, Hickey, what other coach in the Big East would leave the Big East, their current school in the Big East, to go join Providence? So it's kind of like an empty threat. Like, I wouldn't do this. Who's leaving the Big East? Like, is Kyle Neptune leaving Villanova, even though he'd have a good year one, to go join Providence? No. So it's an empty threat, but if I'm a Providence fan, I'm like, yeah, I love this guy. This is awesome. So it's a good job by the AD.
You're not saying he's going to go steal Rick Pitino? Bring him back?
I don't think that's going to happen. I do not think that's going to happen. Dana Altman calls out the fans for not showing up to their NIT game against Wisconsin.
What the heck? We should have more people here tonight. All right? I mean, these guys have played hard. Okay? 3,300 people. You know, it's not good enough. And if it's me, then get rid of me. If you need somebody else to be a promoter, do something. But 3,300 people is embarrassing. It really is.
That sounds like a coach, Hickey, who is ready to move on. I know he's been at Oregon since 2010, but it seems like Dana Altman, who's not getting any younger, he turned 65 this summer. It seems like he's ready to hang him up or go try to coach somewhere else.
Look in the mirror. Like, no one cares about the NIT. Nobody cares. It's almost like he's trying to make himself feel a little bit better about the down year of, oh, this is still an important tournament. We're here at home.
It's not,
though. We're playing Wisconsin. You got to be here. Right. The fans have told you it's not important. No one cares about the NIT. And obviously no one's going to show up because they only care about winning championships at Oregon and making the tournament, not the NIT.
You look at some of these NCAA tournament games, they have a tough time getting fans in the building. So who's going to NIT?
Well, for that, some are very remote.
I get it's a home game. It's different. It's on your campus. But let's just say, so this game was last night. It's a Wednesday night. When you were in college, was there ever a big Wednesday drink night at Penn State's campus?
Wednesday, not too much, but every day of the week had something, or every bar had something to try to get you in. Trivia, so, half price, happy hours, you know.
So there was a bar at Temple's campus that did $1 Bud Lights on Wednesday nights. So if Temple was in the NIT, would I go to the NIT or would I go to the $1 beer night at the bar? Not even a discussion. I'm going to the $1 beer.
What if you're just hanging with your friends in your apartment? Would you hang with your friends in your apartment on a Wednesday, or would you go to the basketball game?
Depends which friends.
I'm not going to the basketball game. I'll tell you that right
now. Do I like these people? Or is
they're your friends, yes.
Well, you never know. Like, I was in a fraternity, so there's some people in the fraternity you don't like, and if they were hanging out in the frat house, I'd be like, okay, I'll go to the basketball game.
No,
but
those are your brothers. We were talking about your friends, people you choose to hang out with on a regular basis.
I think if it was in college, I would use it probably as an excuse to just, get liquored up and go to the game and try to make a push. But if my friends didn't want to go, yeah, I would probably choose rather hang with my friends than go to the game. It's the NIT. It's a
I think
tough
I'd rather
sell.
Study, to be honest. Like, I'm not
I
kidding.
Don't know
about
that. Hold on.
The NIT is so irrelevant. Dana Altman, and we're Penn State's basketball arena. I was a good student.
I'm
like
sorry.
To think.
You're a communications major? How much are you studying?
I was a business minor.
Were you really?
I was.
Okay.
I was.
I didn't do much studying.
So.
Access it showed. I think I did pretty well for myself here. I graduated in 4 years. C's get degrees. I got the degree. In and out. Boom, we're good. I had one problem, though. One final exam. I'll tell this story on the radio. I took a history of radio class. And there was a final. And the final exam, I thought it would be multiple choice. Like, how tough can the history of radio be? It was a fill-in-the-blank final, and I did no studying. And let's just say, in the words of Christopher Mad Dog Russo, I did a gummy the night before the final. Let's say that gummy took a long time to kick in, and then the partying didn't stop there, and then I went to the final at 7 in the morning, Hickey. Did not do well in the final. I failed the final, but my cutting of radio reads was good enough that I was able to pass the class. But I did
whatever
fail the
takes.
Final.
Whatever it takes.
You would study over going to the NIT game?
Yes. I mean, probably not. But it's just more of the point of how irrelevant the NIT is and how little anyone should care why Dana Altman's a fool for sitting here trying to scold a fan base for not going to a game that's truly irrelevant instead of accepting blame for not doing better this season.
Let's hear Pac-Man Jones on which teams DeAndre Hopkins will want to play for. This courtesy of the Pat McAfee Show.
Interest is heating up. There's five teams on that list, and we'll start with the Falcons. Falcons need some help. They need wide receivers. I think that can fit. Ravens. I think if Lamar deal goes and get done, my sources tell me that might be a landing spot. Our sources is telling us it's the Bills.
Especially in Buffalo. It can't work.
I think it could work. Why couldn't it work? I think he can go to Buffalo, 1-year deal. I don't really think it's about the money with him right now.
Okay.
I think he want to get out. And it's a big thing. He want to win. Definitely want to win and get a shot. So my sources tell me Buffalo can work. I like the Raiders, too.
Hey, they made a lot of plays.
The Raiders are on the board also. But I don't know. I go back and look at the teams, and I know D as a person. I'm leaning more toward the Bills or the Ravens.
Feels like Buffalo Bills fans have a reason to be excited. Mm-hmm. But Falcons fans, I guess, in. Ravens fans, in. Raiders fans should know they're in. Anybody else?
Patriots fans.
Oh!
What?
That seems like the Buffalo Bills. I know him and DeAndre Hopkins are close, but maybe you want to take it with a grain of salt when you hear the entire conversation. But if those are the actual five destinations, I would say that the easy choice would be Buffalo. Last night, the Memphis Grizzlies defeated the Rockets 130-125. Ja Morant did make his return. And Ja Morant played in 24 minutes, was 6 of 13 from the field, was 0-2 from behind the arc, and had 17 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, and also did add in 2 steals. This is Taylor Jenkins, the coach of the Grizzlies, who gave his reaction to Ja Morant returning to the lineup.
Phenomenal reception, you know, as he was walking to the scorer's table, you know, really, really excited for him, really excited for our fans to welcome him back. You know, I thought he was great tonight, you know, accepting of the opportunity to come off the bench, knowing how well the team was playing. And this is just part of the process to get him back, you know, with the group.
So that's a news brief, and we'll continue to monitor what happens with Ja Morant, but now he is back to playing.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
So we got a thriller at Madison Square Garden. So coming out of the Michigan State timeout in an 82-80 game with 19.7 seconds to go, Sparty waited, and then with 6 seconds left, New Yorker Tyson Walker made a layup to tie this game up at 2. Now, Kansas State had timeouts, and the right way did not call it. They let Marquise Noel drive down the court. He had a chance for a little runner. It did not fall as he was driving towards the hoop. And this game goes to overtime. Michigan State just took their first lead in the game since 7:32 remaining in regulation. And now with 2:58 to go in overtime, Michigan State has the ball. They are up by 1, 87-86. So this has been a great game at the Garden where you have Tyson Walker, who's a New Yorker, Marquise Noel, who is a New Yorker as well, and we're having a showdown between these two New Yorkers at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden, as you do have Kansas State with the ball, and they just got a layup to then regain the lead, 88-87. Hickey, this is a heavyweight fight, 2:28 to go. I've talked about all week, right? Gonzaga, UCLA, that comes your way later tonight at 9:40 or 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern. I've also discussed as well the matchup tomorrow with Miami and Houston. This has been a game that's been talked about, but it's kind of not gotten enough attention. It's front and center. This is the best game so far of the NCAA tournament.
Game of the year. Game of the year, considering the circumstances, how many back-and-forth lead changes there have been. I swear, in the second half, every single basket that one team has made, the other team has come right down and answered it. It's been, you know, competitive throughout the entire game. They're making shots. They're making tough shots. It's high-level basketball. It's been, honestly, everything you could ask for. This is truly game of the year makings right here.
Now, you had UConn open up the half on a 16-4 run. We've now seen the Razorbacks of Arkansas go on a 7-0 run. With 13:30 remaining in this one, it's UConn 62, Arkansas 40. So the size of UConn and the physicality of UConn has just been a problem for Arkansas, and Arkansas has had no offense other than this 7-0 run right here. But they got hit right in the mouth, 46-29 in that first half. So if that game becomes a game, we'll keep you updated. Kansas State and Michigan State. Michigan State just regained the lead, and then Kansas State just tied it up. So we are now at 90 all with 150 to go in overtime. And Hickey, I'm hoping this goes to double overtime. I hope that even triple overtime. Like, I'm here for all the overtimes tonight between Kansas State and Michigan State. And Hoggard for Michigan State did just get the layup to make it 92-90. So this is back and forth. We've had 15 lead changes here in this one between Kansas State and Michigan State. And did that go, or did they call that off? Is it a foul on the floor?
On the floor.
All right, so it's on the floor, as now you're going to be getting, it's still a two-point game in favor of Michigan State with Kansas State having the basketball. Just what a fun basketball game this is. Where they're just going right at one another. And we'll see how these final 90 seconds do play out, as you do have, I believe Marquise Noel is going to the line. Oh, no, it's someone else going to the line. Sorry, they put the camera on Noel. But the first free throw is good, so now it's a one-point game. Michigan State still up with 129 to go. We can't do play-by-play, so we're not going to do play-by-play. We'll just react to the events after they do happen and try to keep you best up to date as this does continue to go on down between Kansas State and Michigan State. And now with 129 to go, it is a 92-92 game, and Kansas State does take the timeout right after making both of the free throws. This has just been phenomenal. There's no other way to put it. This has been a great game between these two teams, and whoever does prevail as the winner of this game will go to the Elite Eight. Well, they will play on Saturday at Madison Square Garden, and they will get the winner of FAU, Florida Atlantic, with Dusty May's team, and Rick Barnes' squad in Tennessee, as Rick Barnes trying to get to the Final Four. So we'll see who does prevail with FAU and Tennessee. That game is expected to get underway at 9 p.m. Eastern. Obviously, with the delay in this one, with this game going to overtime, that is going to have to be adjusted. So that will get underway whenever this game does wrap up. But you do have Gonzaga UCLA later tonight at 9:45 p.m. Eastern. And that game, I hope it lives up to the hype, because Gonzaga UCLA, we all know what happened a few years ago during the first tournament after COVID, when they're playing in that bubble, limited fans there. You have the cardboard cutouts. Jalen Suggs makes that enormous shot at the buzzer, practically a half-court heave to send Gonzaga to the championship game to, at the time, continue their perfect season. Hickey, I was actually watching that earlier today. It is so bizarre, because we grew accustomed to no fans being in there when we're all just at home watching games, to now see it only a few years later. No, like, basically, no fans in the building. Limited fans are allowed in, but it was mainly cardboard cutouts. To see Jalen Suggs on that table celebrating one of the most historic shots that you'll see in NCAA tournament history, and him standing on the table with basically no fans in his sight, it was very bizarre to see play it back 2 years later.
And it was what, in Lucas Oil Stadium? I think they had a curtain, if I'm not mistaken, or if they, at least they used to, because all those games were in the Indy area and like a bubble there. It was very bizarre. Thankfully, hopefully those times we'll never have to see that again, but it was a shame that you couldn't have a full crowd in the air, in the arena to drink that. Like, imagine it was at Lucas Oil Stadium, 60,000, 70,000 fans, and watching that, and that was the game of the year, that game, to enjoy that buzzer beater would have been insane.
How about that? A little alley-oop. Reverse slam by Keontae Johnson. Great assist by Noel, who has 18 assists and 18 points. Kansas State regains the lead. And they are up 94-92. Michigan State going to have the ball. After the ball did go out of bounds, it's going to stay with them with 44.8 seconds to go. Oh, this was great. Wow. Did you see that? So Jerome Tang and Marquise Noel, it looks like they're having a conversation and disagreeing. And then the next thing you know, it looked like Noel was looking at Tang when he threw that alley-oop to Johnson. And then the next thing you know, it's a two-point lead for Kansas State. This Noel, he's been awesome.
He's perfected the no-look pass. He's done it in the first round. He did it against Kentucky a ton. And now tonight, that has to be at least, off the top of my head, the fourth or fifth time he's had a no-look pass. And it almost looked like it was a scripted play where it's like, we're going to pretend to yell at each other, distract the defense, and then you get the back cut when no one's paying attention. You throw right to the rim. It would work to perfection.
Like when the quarterback runs over to the sideline, coach, what are we doing? What are we doing? And they snap the ball, and the next thing you know, the team's in the end zone. That's what it looked
organized
like.
Organized chaos. That's some stones, though, to call with 1 minute left in overtime. Yeah. It's one thing to call with 13 minutes left in the first half. We're talking about 1 minute left in overtime in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight berth on the line. Let's call that play.
But you look at Kansas State, they have not gotten the respect that a number three seed should get going into this tournament. I think a lot of it has to do with them before the season, starting off the year, to be picked last in the Big 12. You know how people get stubborn and changing their picks, but this team has just been sensational all throughout the year and what they've been able to do. They are earning their respect, obviously, earlier on in the tournament when you find a way to beat Kentucky. But going into this game, it was just so easy. I put some money on Kansas State, also put them in a parlay with some other things, one of them being UConn, and I forget the third leg of it. I believe it was just Tennessee money line. So I'm rooting for Kansas State to win this game. But you look at all those teams that were in that bracket. You know, I put Kansas State in the Elite Eight, and I almost put them in over Duke, but then like everyone's going Duke, and I fell into the trap of everyone loving Duke. But you see the teams that were in that region. You have Purdue, you have Duke, Tennessee, Kentucky, Michigan State, Marquette. It seemed like no one, Hickey, was taking Kansas State to potentially prevail out of that East region and go to the Final Four. And here we are. They still got to hold on. They still got to go win this game and then go win the next game. But this story just keeps on getting better and better. It really does.
You can't call them a Cinderella, but it almost has that feel a little bit just because, like you said, the seed is high, but
the
respect level
has
been very low. Yes.
So Michigan State, they went to the free throw line. They split. So now Kansas State is up by one with 30 seconds to go. We'll see. We're going to get cut off here because we have a hard out here. So we'll update you on the other side of how this goes down between Kansas State and Michigan State. Noel jacks up another three just like he did at the end of regulation, and it's no good. I don't understand that one. So Kansas State is up by one with 17.2 seconds to go.